The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
Hello, and welcome to Florida Law Talk with attorneys Charles A. Moorhead III and Gary M. Singer. Florida Law Talk is a service of the Broward County Bar Association, 954-764-8310. Charles, our president, is a board-certified civil trial lawyer specializing in serious personal injury, wrongful death, legal malpractice, and more. Gary is a syndicated columnist appearing every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, a Florida board-certified real estate attorney, and also practices in civil litigation and contract law, and is chairperson of our real estate section. And now, here's today's show.
Hello, I'm Damian Polgar. Welcome to Florida Law Talk. Our third session's here in Boca, I think it is.
It is, Damian.
And we've got I've got a couple of guys sitting in front of me. We've got Gary Singer.
Hi, Damian. How's it going, Charles?
Good, good. Charles is over here.
Doctor, how are you, sir?
Good, good, good. I'm going to give out our phone number real quick. I'm going to do it a couple times throughout the show, so here we go. 561-995-8255. One more time. 561-995-8255. I am not an attorney. I work for Alpine Jaguar. We're a co-sponsor of the show, and I am happy to be here. I think we have a guest today.
We do have Abby Rifkin.
Abby Rifkin.
And Jacqueline Howe, assuming she's able to make it through this traffic jam on 95.
Yep, yep. There's always a traffic incident somewhere on 95.
Indeed.
You know. And for all those who are stuck in traffic, feel free to call in at 561-995-8255.
There you go.
You want opinions? We have some.
Yeah, yeah.
First, I'll share a little bit of background information from the Broward County Bar Association.
What do you got?
This past week, we made our filing with the Florida Supreme Court opposing the changes in for-profit lawyer referral services. It was our view that the proposals to weaken the rules would do just that and not protect the public adequately and diminish lawyer referral rules statewide.
So. It's funny when they stick your hands in something that was working just fine and then they, you know, try and change it for someone else's benefit.
Well, it's not that it wouldn't help, you know, some people, but it's the wrong people. The for-profit people would be greatly helped. And, you know, we're really not a fan of outside people from California or Seattle taking advantage of our citizens.
Yeah, it's not exactly the point, you know. You're supposed to help the people that need the help the most.
Well, you know, I'm a big fan of profit. I'm a big fan of business. I'm a big fan of free market. And for those of you who have listened to the show and our predecessor show, know I'm a libertarian, so I really am a big fan of not regulating things that don't need to be regulated. And I feel very strongly about that. I always have. But in this particular area, this is something that we really want the nonprofit. You want the way we're doing it now, like through the Broward Bar with the nonprofit lawyer referral service, because when you start putting profit in front of people that are in need, you start getting problems. And it's just an area that does need to have those restrictions on it. It's one of the few exceptions I believe in.
Well, we're going to try to get Ms. Rifkin on the phone here, and here she comes right now.
I'm here. Hi.
Hi, Abby. How are you?
How are you, Ms. Rifkin?
I'm wonderful today. So glad to be here with you.
Great, but we have Abby Rifkin.
I'm not there in body, but I am there by voice.
Excellent.
I'm sitting in a parking garage waiting to go to class. I teach at FIU, so that's where I am right now.
Beautiful. Well, we wanted to talk to you a little bit. We understand you're running for judge here in Broward County.
I am.
And first, we wanted to go into a little bit of your credentials and qualifications to be a judge. What makes you a good candidate for judge?
Well, as I tell everyone, I'm a wife of 32 years. I'm a mother of two beautiful daughters, and I'm a public servant. And I've been a public servant my entire legal career.
That makes you a saint, my eyes.
Seriously. Because I've been a prosecutor for 35 years, but as a prosecutor, I speak for the people, all of the people, including the accused, because I need to make sure that everyone is treated fairly. And I think that's what makes me the qualified candidate in Group 15, is that I am able to see a case from a 360-degree angle, because that's my job and that's what I've been doing. So it's no leap for me to go from being a prosecutor to being a judge.
Yeah, a lot of people forget that a prosecutor's obligation is to the people, not to win at all costs. It's the other way around, to do justice.
That's right, and I take that extremely seriously because I've acquitted as many people as I've convicted simply because if you're going to make an accusation about against somebody, you better be able to prove it. And I take that oath seriously. And I think that that will carry over. I know that will carry over to when I take the bench in Broward County.
So you live in Broward. You've practiced in Miami-Dade your entire career?
Yes. I've lived in Broward since 1982. I went to the University of Miami, and when you wanted to be a prosecutor and went to the University of Miami, you went to the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office. And when I was a third-year law student, Janet Reno was the state attorney, and she offered me a job as a law student. So I basically never left. I've had so much experience. I've had so many great experiences in Miami-Dade, and when I decided to run, when I decided that I wanted to be a judge, the only place that I thought about was Broward County because that's where I've lived so long. I've spent pretty much my entire adult life in Broward County. It's where I raised my children. It's where I live. It's where my home is. It's where my friends are. And it's where I worship. So it's the place that I want to serve.
Sure. And, of course, the law requires you to live here as well to be our judge. So that makes sense.
Now, Abby, this is Gary. I understand that you've pretty much always wanted to be the judge. As a matter of fact, I think you've been up before the nominating committee a few times. Why is it that you've always wanted to be a judge?
I've always wanted to be a judge from the day I took the oath of the Florida Bar. Being a judge is the highest calling of public service, and I think I've demonstrated I really like public service. It was never about the money. It was about the joy of representing the people and the honor and the privilege. So to me, it's just a natural progression to go from a public servant representing the people to a public servant who is hired by the people to judge fairly. Now, as far as the process, yeah, I put my name in. I've been vetted by the Judicial Nominating Committee. I've been honored to be nominated 9 times for 11 seats. And unfortunately, the governor picked other people. So I decided, well, I think it's time for me to take it to the people, which is what I'm doing right now. And so far, the people seem to be responding. I just hope that they continue that trend in November.
I also understand that the Sun Sentinel endorsed you. Is that correct?
They did. I was so excited and so honored and so privileged to be endorsed by not only the Sun Sentinel, but so many others. I've been endorsed by the Hispanic Votes. I've been endorsed by the National Organization of Women, the National Women's Political Caucus, the Dolphin Democrats. Oh, my God. I've forgotten the others, but
Let's get away from these little puff pieces here. Let's talk about real stuff. How many cases have you tried?
Oh, God, I stopped counting in the 90s. I've been trying cases since I was a law student. I started in 1980. I've tried hundreds of cases. I couldn't even put a number on it because I stopped counting. Probably 1995 is the last time I put in a trial stat.
Have you argued any appeals?
Well, yeah. We not only are we responsible for carrying through with the Attorney General's office, but I've been so lucky because my cases go to the Supreme Court. So while I haven't actually done the argument, I participated in the arguments before the Supreme Court because I handle those capital cases. I've also participated in the writing of briefs before the Third District Court of Appeal.
So have you prosecuted people for first-degree murder?
Pretty much all of my cases are first-degree murder now. I've been honored to prosecute the first no-body homicide in Miami-Dade County and the second one, and I participated in the appeals on both of those, and I'm happy to report both of those were affirmed on appeal.
So no corpus delicti, but you got them anyway.
Listen, the only thing I was missing in both of those cases was a body, although the second one was a little tougher because it was 17 years before. But, you know, sometimes you're lucky and a lot of hard work and you find all of the witnesses. And I found every single witness that made it able for me to persuade the jury in less than an hour that the defendant was guilty.
Have you ever moved to set aside a conviction that you thought was improperly rendered?
No, I've not had that occur, but it would be the first thing that I would do if I thought that anyone that I had prosecuted was either not guilty or innocent.
Fair enough. Maybe that's a testament to your screening of the cases to start with.
Listen, we work at my level especially. We work hand in hand with the police department because we need to make sure that all of the I's are dotted and all the T's are crossed, which is why we are on call. And I'm on call a lot. And that means I go out in the middle of the night and I go to the crime scene and I work side by side with the police making sure that all of the applicable laws are followed, that we get warrants where we need warrants, that we don't do things that we're not supposed to be doing, because that's the only way that you can make sure that the law is followed and that everyone is treated fairly.
Now, I understand you're a Nova Shark as well, right?
What's that?
You went to Nova?
No, I didn't. I went to the University of Miami.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Are you deaf? Local,
but I'm a huh? Gator. But
no,
I'm
it said on the piece.
I'm an undergrad Gator.
Yeah. Sorry about that. I was reading a bio on you that was actually wrong. But okay, so you have a lot of experiences. I feel silly, but that's what I'll show it to you, Charles.
Oh, I appreciate
I really
that.
Was reading it.
She just told us she went to the University of Miami.
I know, but that's why I was confirming it, because of peace. Anyway, so you're bringing a lot of experience to the criminal bench, but what's your philosophy going to be if you have to do a civil division?
Well, I also run the Jimmy Rice Unit, which is, if you know about that, that's Sexually Violent Predator Unit, which is civil commitment. So I've had the opportunity as a prosecutor to try a couple of civil trials, which I have to tell you, coming from the criminal world, was an eye-opener, but it's not that much different. Plus, I teach trial advocacy at FIU. So in addition to teaching how to try cases, one of the things that I do is help train the trial team. And generally, the trial team is going to be a civil case. So I have some experience, not as much, but I have some experience trying civil cases and teaching about trying civil cases.
Well, we want to really thank you for coming on the show and informing the listenership about your credentials and your thoughts on being a judge. And we're so fortunate to have people like you who run for judge, and we're very grateful.
Thank you so much for having me. For all of your listeners, please feel free to look me up online. I always ask people, just don't take my word for it. Google me, research me, and find out all about me. And I think that if you do, that you would be more inclined to vote for me. I think that Broward really, really, really is in need of the best people possible to be judges to make sure that the judiciary is fair.
Abby, what's your website to be a judge?
It's RifkinForJudge.com.
R-I-F.
And also my Facebook page, Abby Rifkin for Judge.
And Rifkin spelled how?
R-I-F as in Frank, K-I-N as in Nancy. For F-O-R, Judge, J-U-D-J-G-E.
Well, we want to wish you the very best of luck. And I believe
thank
we
you so
have.
Much.
All right. Good luck. And we'll talk to you soon when we get to call you Your Honor. And we're going to take it out for a break.
Thank you.
Almost all of us will find ourselves in need of legal advice or representation at some point. Finding the right lawyer can be a daunting task. The Broward County Bar Association is not a law firm. It's a not-for-profit organization formed in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism among Broward County lawyers, to educate citizens on their legal rights, and to provide necessary legal services to Broward County residents. With over 3,200 members, the Broward County Bar Association can connect you with the right attorney for any legal need. Access is simple by phone, in person, or online, and our staff can aid you in English, Spanish, or Creole. While attorneys are fully insured and consultations are available at little or even no cost to you, don't guess or simply follow an ad. Get a referral you know you can count on by contacting the Broward County Bar Association. Our phone number is 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310, or reach us online at browardbar.org. Gary M. Singer is a Florida board-certified real estate attorney. Mr. Singer practices in real estate, civil litigation, and contract law from his office in Sunrise and owns Gibraltar Title in Fort Lauderdale. He is the chairperson of the Broward County Bar Association and sits on its board of directors. Gary writes a weekly syndicated column appearing locally every Monday in the Sun Sentinel. Contact Gary at the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, for your free consultation. 954-851-1448 or go to GarySingerLaw.com.
We're back. Thank you, folks. We've got a new guest here, Ms. Jacqueline Howe. How are you?
Good. How are you, Charles?
I'm doing great.
Hello.
Thanks very much.
Now, I do want to point out that Jacqueline teaches at Nova, if I'm not mistaken.
I used to.
You used to. But I knew there was a Nova in here somewhere.
Look at Gary going back to the well.
I'm still blushing.
I have a feeling I'm missing a part of a conversation.
No, I got the wrong college for Abby Rifkin before. I misread it when I was doing the bio on it, so I felt bad. So I wanted to bring Nova in this somehow.
Well, I used to teach legal negotiations at the law school.
Ooh. As opposed to illegal ones?
As opposed to illegal. I would try to steer them toward, you know, keeping their bar license once they got it.
I got you.
Which, by the way, the results came out today.
I know they did. I've been reading it on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's funny how...
Happy to say another one of my law clerks passed the bar, and we're at 100% for our law clerks passing the bar.
How many clerks?
Excellent.
I want to say almost over 20.
Congratulations.
100%, yeah.
Great, man. So tell us about your practice, Jacqueline.
Well, I am a commercial and real estate litigation attorney. I'm with the law firm of Schutz & Bowen. I've been doing this about 20 years. And in addition to teaching legal negotiations and being a Supreme Court certified circuit civil mediator, I like to think that my practice is really centered toward the business owner. Mm-hmm. While I am a litigator, I'm a relationships person. So it is more important to me that when a client walks in the door, they know that I don't see them as a one and done. You know, come in, file a lawsuit, take all their money without necessarily looking at their best interest, and then I'll never see them again. My goal is to have a client walk in and understand that I am, to the best way possible, looking out for their best interest. You know, the litigators in the room, Charles, know that litigation is by far not a guarantee. But all you can do from a client connectivity standpoint is have them know that you're looking out for them the best you can. Keep them well informed, understand, you know, and explain to them the risks of their case. Really make sure they understand coming in the warts, as I like to call
it. You better believe it.
With their case, because there is not a case that comes through the door that doesn't have warts. If it didn't, they wouldn't be coming to see us.
Well, sometimes it's not true, but usually I'll grant you overwhelmingly every case has warts. So tell us for a minute, please, what is the most likely client to walk through your door in your practice?
A business
owner.
Who
is that person?
A business owner.
Okay.
A business owner that either bought or sold a business. Quite often I'll get the seller of a business that, you know, sells the business and the buyer defaults on the payments. Or conversely, I'll get a buyer where, you know, they'll find out once they're in a business, really doing a deep dive into the books and what's going on and the representations, that it wasn't quite what was represented.
Well, let me ask you this. Should they contact you before or after they sign a contract to buy or sell the business?
They should definitely contact an attorney before they buy a business.
Tell us why.
Because a lot of times people are penny wise and dollar foolish.
You're so right. And this is an area of law I actually practice, and I don't know if at the same level as you at Schutz & Bowen, but I practice. And what I find, and tell me if you agree, is that buyers, when you're representing the buyer, they don't want to hear it. They want the business, and they're going to ignore or try to ignore a lot of your advice. And oftentimes, you seem to be fighting against your own clients to hold them back and show them the reality of the situation, good or bad, as you are against trying to get the other side to do what they're supposed to. What are your experiences in that?
I'm not a transactional attorney, but I agree 100%. How I liken it is when somebody is looking to buy and somebody is looking to sell a business, it is not unlike a marriage. Right? Everybody's dating. They're putting their best face on. There's no prenup. And then they get married. And at the end of the day, they realize they are entirely incompatible, or they were sold a bill of goods that they did not otherwise think they were buying. It's the same
thing.
Couldn't
happen in South Florida.
No,
not down here. Well, it's not only that. They don't want the attorney involved to mess up the deal. Oh, if we get an attorney, we'll hire an attorney. You're just going to come in and mess up the deal.
Right.
Like, that's what attorneys want to do by telling them where the warts are.
Exactly. They don't want to know where the warts are. And you need an attorney that's sophisticated. Gary, I know you do real estate. It's the same principle with real estate as with a business.
Sure.
You need an attorney that is knowledgeable enough and sophisticated enough that can tell you what all the issues are. And then at the end of the day, they are all big boys and girls. and they can make the decisions for themselves, but they have to make informed decisions. And if they don't want to hear what you have to say as their counselor,
they need a new lawyer.
Then they need a new lawyer.
Well, they don't want to listen to any lawyer. What they need is a letter, so that way
when they hire someone later,
they don't come after me as well.
Well, but really,
they just want to buy it so much that they don't necessarily care
as well.
And exactly. Then later, when it hits in, then they're going to hire someone to litigate on.
Of course. And then it's true. It's absolutely true. And the only thing that you can say from all sides of this scenario is paper everything. Have emails. You know, a lot of times, you know, Charles.
Or no emails for Hillary Clinton.
Well, you don't let her save
your stuff.
So paper everything with your own private client.
But, you know, it's funny what you say about paper. I had a client come to me with a serious personal injury tragedy. And as that case was pending last year, they literally walked in with a napkin. And it was a deal to sell their Chinese restaurant. And that was the entire deal signed by both parties.
On a napkin.
All the terms. I think there were about 10 words on the napkin. That was it.
Didn't we study that scenario in law school?
And they literally made it happen with those 10 words. It was very funny. And the deal was one of the smoothest things you ever saw. My partner looked at it and said, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do? But the truth is, it went fine. It was great.
They really did a deal on a napkin.
Yeah,
well, sure. When everyone's
did.
On the
That's
same page,
amazing.
You don't need anything but a handshake.
Right.
But the problem is, and why the contract is so important and a properly drafted one, is when things go bad. So yeah. What are some of the things you're seeing out there? Like, what's trending problem-wise out there?
I think what's trending out there, it's funny, in my world, when times are good, people sue. And when times are bad, people sue. People want to sue, but they don't have the money to sue.
Right.
So what I'm seeing now are a lot of disputes coming out of, let's call them intentional or unintentional misunderstandings, things not be, and it comes back to good transactional lawyering ahead of time. People not having deals documented.
Give us an example.
I'm trying to think. No pressure. A good example is somebody that was buying a business,
mm-hmm.
and I wish it didn't sound redundant, but it's exactly what we're talking about, where everybody wanted to do a deal.
Okay.
They did not want to spend money on lawyers.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It was only a $1.5 million cash deal.
Why bother
spending money on attorneys?
We've got that to track every day, I'm just saying.
That several thousand clearly is going to make
a break. Of course. And the person that purchased this particular business had absolutely no experience in this industry.
That usually works well.
It worked out so well.
Every business running it is exactly the same. Just ask anyone trying to purchase outside
a
of
a seamless
it.
Transition.
If I can run a yacht brokerage, there's no reason I can't run a Mexican restaurant.
That is pretty
right?
much what the example was.
I've heard
was.
That so many times.
It was virtually that example.
If I can sell a yacht, I can sell a taco.
And lo and behold, this buyer, got into this business that was very... I lost the word trade sensitive. Mm-hmm. It was very tactile. It was creation.
Okay.
And this buyer had no experience with that. It involved a lot of artistry and had a hard time.
What can go wrong there?
Oh,
bankruptcy. That's
and,
what can go
well,
wrong.
He decided that it wasn't his fault, that he bought a business he had no business buying and tried to come back on my client, the seller, who was an immigrant.
And still laughing on their way to the bank.
Not after he got served with the lawsuit.
Yeah.
And you know what? A lot of heartache, sleepless nights, and money paid to me later. We wound up reaching an amicable resolution that, honestly, had they just hired both sides, candidly, had they hired attorneys at the outset, the buyer would have either realized early on, boy, I had no business buying this business. Or the seller, I mean, they crafted their own non-competes.
Mm.
And they decided all on their own to carve out a portion of the business. So, you know, it was just everything you hear that can happen when you don't hire the right attorney ahead of time. Or you don't have the right attorney on speed dial that can be your quarterback.
See, these are all the same problems that come in, like even like buying your will on LegalZoom or one of these, you know, now I'm going to get sued, but they come in, it's not so much the forms or this or that. You just don't know the questions to ask. You don't know the problems that could come up, and then you end up paying. And, you know, the funny part is when you do transactional law, you know it's going to be 10 or 20 times as much in litigation to fix it later. Like, they could pay you $2,000 now or pay a litigator $40,000 to unwind it, but they don't want to spend the money on attorneys.
Well, the analogy I use is, would you rather avoid the accident or repair the car?
Yeah,
that's a great one.
A lot cheaper to avoid the accident.
That's exactly
right.
Or
in Charles's case, with the trailer.
Yeah, it was the trailer.
I don't put my head in a cow's mouth to know what the meat tastes. No, wait, that was a movie.
Wait, uh-oh. Where are you going?
A little Tommy Boy.
Gary makes a left turn here.
A clean Tommy Boy quote, sorry.
Listen, I like to think that as a litigator...
I just wanted a saying, too. It's not fair Charles gets all the good sayings.
Oh, come on.
Listen to this.
He's the president. You got to come some slack.
Right? Yeah. Come on.
Guess it goes with the turf.
Give me, you have any, I don't know, I want to put a little color on this conversation here.
Well, the art that she's talking about was dancing.
Oh.
It was exotic dancing was the art. Is
that better? I was trying to be more PC about it. But
not in this crowd.
Is that enough color?
You're in the wrong crowd for that.
You know what? Sometimes when we come in these public forums...
Got to keep it clean, man.
There's only so much information we could give. But a litigator is the nuclear option.
Yeah.
And litigation is the nuclear option. So all...
Generally inefficient as hell and a nightmare for all concerned.
And expensive. Really is.
But sometimes it's the only way out.
Listen, if I litigate, it's because there's no other option and you have to do it to enforce your rights.
What about pre-suit mediation? Do you have any luck with that?
I do. I do. I write a mean demand letter.
Oh, boy. A nasty gram.
I am pretty good at the nasty gram. But I have to tell you, I have clients that say, write a demand letter and do this. And I am not ashamed or not embarrassed, I should say is a better word, to push back and say, I will not do it unless you are fully prepared to take the next step.
Wait, I got one. Don't pull the gun unless you're ready to shoot.
Right.
And on that note, I'm going to take that.
Okay, we've got to stop the
cliches. I got a quote. Hey, on that note, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back.
Introducing the all-new Jaguar F-Pace. The first SUV from Jaguar is inspired by the Jaguar F-Type. It comes with 380 horsepower and is built on lightweight aluminium architecture for incredible agility and handling, not to mention head-turning looks. The Jaguar F-Pace also has all of the conveniences of a luxury SUV with space for five and plenty of versatile storage. And now, all Jaguar models are protected by Jaguar Elite Care, best-in-class coverage for up to 5 years or 60,000 miles. So even though your lifestyle demands a practical car, with a Jaguar F-Pace, you still get to enjoy real performance when you drive. Purchase the all-new 2017 Jaguar F-Pace, starting price MSRP $42,390. Price excludes administration fees, taxes, license, and other fees. Retailer price, terms, and vehicle availability may vary. For complete details, visit Alpine Jaguar or call 954-598-7900.
When it comes to legal representation for your business, you need an expert. Alan Danz is the founder and managing partner of Danz and Kronengold Fiel, a boutique labor and employment firm. Alan has vast hands-on business experience and is uniquely qualified to know the business of your business. He represents businesses and business owners only to protect their interests by ensuring compliance with the complicated maze of labor and employment laws and defending them in employment litigation disputes. Get the legal help your business needs from an attorney who understands your business. Call Alan Danz at 954-530-9245. That's 954-530-9245. Or go to danslaw.net for more information.
Hi, and we're back. This is Gary Singer along with Charles Moorhead.
And me too. I'm over here, man.
And our guest, Jacqueline Howe. And Charles is pointing at our phone number. So if you want to call in, it's 561-995-8255, or if you don't want to spend the quarter, it's 888-721-0074.
Did you just say that?
What? Is it still a
quarter? I don't know. If you don't want to spend the minute on your cell phone.
Yeah,
I'm getting old.
I
just had a birthday. I'm officially old.
Come on. It's all about the data plan.
Well, happy birthday.
Thank you. Happy birthday.
But you're a lot younger than I am. So
that's my story.
Yeah,
I'm sticking to it.
Oh, here we go.
So
there's the left turn.
We were talking offline a little bit about non-competes.
Yeah.
What do people need to know about a covenant not to compete or a promise not to do business the way you do business?
It all depends on the reason for the non-compete. If you're an employee, mm-hmm. you know, first of all, there are many states in the union that do not enforce non-competes, California being the most notorious. Others look at a non-compete from what's called a common law perspective, mm-hmm. in that it's not codified by statute. So they're looked at on a case-by-case basis as to reasonableness and the history and the progression of the case law.
Let's back up just a second. Tell us what a non-compete is.
Yeah, let's define that.
A non-compete is a restraint of trade. So
that sounds like lawyer talk. What's that
it
mean?
It does, but we're a room full of lawyers and dealers.
No, I'm a car dealer.
And listen, my dad was a car dealer.
I
speak,
you know,
car dealer.
See that?
No wonder she's rich.
Oh, wow.
So we're a room full of
sharks. Listen, and my dad said the deal
I'm still
is,
waiting.
Yeah, the deal is never done until you see the taillights down the street.
Oh, right. Joel's burning gas. I want it over the curb. Let's
right?
go.
Right, which is what I say for settlement agreements.
Ooh.
The deal is never done until they are signed and people have performed.
So,
but a restraint of trade is basically saying you can't do what you otherwise would want to do for a particular period of time,
right.
and over a specific geographical location.
I'm going to make this dumber because I don't understand that kind of stuff. So,
So
the bottom line is, if an employee comes to work for somebody and they train them well and they've got all kinds of methods of doing business that are proprietary, many times for that person to get the job, they'll put a piece of paper under their nose and say, sign here. And what happens is when there's a firing or a separation 2 or 3 years later or hours or weeks or months, they can't go back and practice that same craft or work in some geographical location for some period of time, right?
As long as it is reasonable in time, scope, and geography.
Sure. 2 years
See,
in
I keep
Florida.
Throwing those lawyer words back
yeah.
in.
2 years, reasonable in Florida.
Right. For an
you
employee.
Know, Damien, I don't know if this breaks an attorney-client privilege, but Damien had come to me and said that Alpine Jaguar wanted him to sign that he wouldn't sell any Jaguars for a certain period of time. I said, Damien, what are you giving up?
I can assure you my store had never said they do not want me to sell a car.
Damien, what are you giving up? You're not selling any Jaguars
That does
now.
Not happen in my industry. but I have signed non-competes in Florida, where you have a unique business, and if you're on the cutting edge of a particular line of business, you know, and you're if I separated and they tried to enforce it unsuccessfully because it wasn't reasonable in a scope, I just used too much.
Well, I have a problem with a lot of non-competes for this reason.
Uh-oh.
People come to me because I've handled this work for years. And before and after the amendment to the statutes now 15, 20 years ago.
I didn't know you then.
And, you know, people go to an employer with a great skill set and 20 years or 25 years in the industry, and the employer, who barely knows them other than by reputation, puts a non-compete under their nose and says, here, sign here. They sign. 3 weeks later, they say, you know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. The company's no good. I'm leaving. And now they can't do what they've done for 25 years and use their knowledge and skill set.
Is that enforceable?
It can be.
Sure.
The fight
it definitely costs money.
Well, then you're in litigation because you have to look at whether the employer provided some particular knowledge that they did not otherwise have. A lot of times these guys that have been in a particular business will pick on car dealers. You know, they have a book of business. Let's pick on car dealers
Why
for
not?
A while. Why not?
Let's have some fun.
So they come in and they have their client base and they have, you know, their whole thing down, and they get fired in 3 weeks. And, you know, the car dealer, not Alpine Jaguar.
Never would
they
be
would
Alpine
never
Jaguar.
Do that. Would say, well, we provided you with the client list and we provided you with the training. Well, therein lies the litigation of, no, I had 20 years of experience. These are my client contacts. These are not something that's easily accessible if you open the phone book.
Right.
You know, so unfortunately, that's one of those situations where if it were me and somebody came in the door, I would first say, okay, let's try and see if we can work this out. And try and reach lawyer term amicable resolution, something everybody is unhappy with. That's an amicable resolution, and if not, then you have to litigate.
I've one of the issues I have with your non-competes is it's often used as a leverage point to in gaining employment with a certain company, where either party doesn't know each other really well. They're trying, one company might be trying to bring in employment, and in order to gain that employment, the potential employee has to sign a non-compete. They're both as green can be on how they're going to interact weeks down the road. What do you do there? I mean, you know.
You have to make a business decision.
Ah.
And how badly do you want the job?
That's why we have a business attorney.
Well, you know, it's true, because at the end of the day, nobody is twisting your arm to take that particular job. And if you are uncomfortable with a non-compete and it can't be tailored or narrowed into a way that you're more comfortable with, or they don't pay you enough money to compensate you for the potential downside if it doesn't work out, you know, a lot of companies, you'll have a severance, then you are free to walk away.
Yeah, so there's no, what do they call, Florida's a right-to-work state, correct?
And, yes.
Right, so how does that play any role in how the courts would view a non-compete? No?
No.
Yes? Not really?
No.
Well, it's also employment contracts, of
right,
course.
Right.
So when you're in an employment contract, that contract matters as well. They can't just ignore the contract and say, oh, we have every right to do whatever we want. They alter those rights due to the contract.
But both of those things usually go hand in hand, an employment contract with a non-compete.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So it's a little different.
And another, I have neither. And another nuance to that is a non-compete versus a non-solicitation agreement.
Oh.
True. Will you steal my employees or not?
Right.
Employees, relationships, vendors, and confidentiality agreements and whatnot. You know, the interesting part is, and you brought it up a second ago, is often, oh, it's so unfair. They say I can't do what I do for a living, but no one forced them to take the job. So when you take a job, even if you really need a job, you got to be eyes wide open and actually read what you're signing. But, you know, the question then becomes, so you're sitting there and they offer you the job and they go, we want you to sign this, this, and this. And you're going to say, what are you going to do? Oh, give me 3 days to have my attorney review it.
Yes. And you have every right to do that.
Yeah, and then, we filled it, sorry.
And that is your business decision.
Listen, man, that'd be the best money you ever spent.
That's right.
No doubt, I agree.
If that's where is the deal, then listen, you're better off walking away.
But how many times in either of your careers have you ever came to someone, oh, I'm about to get a job, but I want you to review the contract?
I have.
From a non-attorney?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
You bet.
Sure.
It kind of sounds to me, it's almost like trying to buy a business. You know, the potential employee wants to get hired really, really badly. Like the buyer of a business really, really, really wants to buy it. And one of the conditions of gaining employment would be to sign this non-compete agreement. But that employee really wants a job. He just puts his signature on it. And then
you deal with the fallout later.
Yeah, he's got remorse.
That's the 99% compared to the one.
What's the difference when I buy a business versus I go to work for one as an employee? Can the non-compete be more restrictive?
Yes, it can be broader in scope. I believe, Charles, tell me if I'm wrong, I think it can be up to 10 years.
Yes.
If you're buying or selling a business, it can be a 10-year non-compete. And what they do quite often, if you're selling a business, and you are the name or the face of the business, quite often they'll have a year or 2 years where they'll keep you on. You'll have an employment contract for a year or two in the business to help with the transition so there's no hiccups, so you can go through that. But those are even the more technically watched because, again, I'll go back. If you're spending $1.5 million to buy a business, the last thing you want is that seller walking out with cash in hand, turning around
to
go compete against you. Now, I will say that a lot of those sellers, if it's, let's say, a 2-year or a 5-year non-compete, man, they have 5-year and a day on their calendar.
Yeah, and I know of one auto dealer in town who had
a non-compete. Alpine Jaguar.
Not Alpine Jaguar.
Who had a non-compete when he sold his dealerships and is now buying up dealerships at a voracious pace after the 7 years expired. Smart business.
Our economy is based on capitalism.
So what do you do if you buy a business and they start competing? You know, the seller agreed not to, and now they are.
You get an injunction. You get damages.
You can get injunctive relief.
Right. And
which means stop.
Stop. And that is where you come in, and that is a quick and dirty and expensive process.
It is. And, you know, one thing that people really don't realize or appreciate until it's too late is the new employer of an employee that leaves and begins competing against his old employer can well be liable for that employee's actions, particularly if they know that the employee is doing this and then they countenance that and let him keep doing it on their, you know, property and they're in on the, in their business. And so you write both people a letter, the employee that left and the new business, and say, hey, buddy, if you don't stop, we're coming after you. And they usually have the money. And many, many times, one letter does the trick. They say, uh-oh. And, of course, what happens is Billy Bob is fired.
Nasty grams for everybody.
Well, what happens is the new employer, while not bound by the contract, is making themselves open to a claim for a tortious interference with a contractual
relationship. That's a big lawyer word.
I couldn't even say it without tripping over it.
I know. You put your nose in my business. Get out.
Right.
Right.
And they don't want to buy, you know, unless this person is the best thing since sliced bread, they are buying litigation. Yeah. And they don't really want to do that. So then, and I've had those circumstances where the new employer will call me and say, come on, can't we work this out? Let's work it out. And I've had.
Sometimes you can.
I have.
A little payment.
A little payment here or there. And other times they say, no, go pound sand. You know, but you just don't know. And really prudent employers will say, right, if you're in a specialized field,
do you have
a non-compete?
Let's see it.
And I've had employers that I've represented say, oh, we have this non-compete. What do you, you know, look at the non-compete. Mm-hmm. What do you think our exposure is?
Right.
And then other ones that have just passed.
I've had other people say, I'm going to run in the red light. Let's go.
Yep, I'm going to take the chance. And then I like to say, that's fine. It's your business decision. Right. My clients know that when I say it's your business decision, I don't really agree, but it's not my business.
Yep, for sure. Well, we're going to step away for a minute, and we'll be right back.
Charles Moorhead III is a partner at Abramowitz, Pomerantz & Moorhead, PA. With over 30 years of experience, he specializes in serious personal injury and wrongful death, traumatic brain injury, legal malpractice, and medical malpractice. Mr. Moorhead is board certified in civil trial law, listed in the best lawyers in America for personal injury, and is president of the Broward County Bar Association. Get your injury questions answered. Call Charles Moorhead III at 954-572-7200, or go to floridainjurylawyers.com. Almost all of us will find ourselves in need of legal advice or representation at some point. Finding the right lawyer can be a daunting task. The Broward County Bar Association is not a law firm. It's a not-for-profit organization formed in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism among Broward County lawyers, to educate citizens on their legal rights, and to provide necessary legal services to Broward County residents. With over 3,200 members, the Broward County Bar Association can connect you with the right attorney for any legal need. Access is simple by phone, in person, or online, and our staff can aid you in English, Spanish, or Creole. All attorneys are fully insured, and consultations are available at little or even no cost to you. Don't guess, or simply follow an ad. Get a referral you know you can count on by contacting the Broward County Bar Association. Our phone number is 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310, or reach us online at browardbar.org.
Welcome back. This is Gary Singer at Florida Law Talk with Damian.
Do the YMCA thing again?
No, I'm not going to do the YMCA.
Oh,
I will say that our guest has something in common with the Village People. You guys missed it because Damian got up. He was doing the dance. He's dressed like the car dealer. Not going to tell you who's dressed like the Native American.
This
is where we make the right turn from Charles's left turn. All right, so we're in the break, and you know we like to humanize things a little bit, and you are the incoming.
I am the incoming chair of the YMCA of South Florida.
That's awesome.
And do you actually start every meeting with the dance?
We do not.
See, you should.
What is the YMCA?
It's a song by the Village People from the 70s.
Thank you, Gary. Thank you.
Someone put Gary back in the cage.
So going full circle with this show, in 2008, I represented the YMCA. of what was then Broward County.
Cool.
Where they had an employee.
It's still Broward County. It was a serious question. What is that an acronym for?
Young Men's Christian Association. Okay. Although it is so much more than that.
Can you say that?
Because I am neither a Christian nor a man.
Can you say that on the air?
Agreed. Absolutely. Oh.
So what does that mean? What do y'all do?
What do we do? Sure. We are the largest nonprofit in the country. We have the largest volunteer base. We
bigger than the Clinton Foundation.
You know, I knew driving up here that you guys would try to reel me in.
You know,
and that I would very tactfully say,
because
I'm
the Clinton
biting.
Foundation, Charles, does a lot of good, especially for the Clintons.
Right. I love it. All right, so go ahead. Before we rudely interrupted you.
That's okay. Yeah. That's okay. The YMCA is really cradle to the grave for the Broward, Miami-Dade, and North Monroe communities. They are the largest provider of aftercare. They are the largest provider of, this one really is special to me, of aftercare for special needs people.
Great
which
programs.
Which is really, really wonderful. They work with all of the child services agencies. They really are amazing. I will give you trivia. The YMCA invented basketball.
Really?
Yes.
Wow.
The YMCA started Father's Day. It started... I didn't bring this information. I'm going to say something wrong, and somebody's going to call me on it. I want to say... Father's Day.
That's good.
For the men in the room.
I appreciate that.
What else? I believe volleyball. I mean, it's crazy the impact that the YMCA has had on our culture.
How old's the YMCA, roughly?
150 years old.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
So you're going to be the president of the Young Men's Christian Association.
And I am
you're not a young man. Yeah.
And I'm not Christian.
See that? That's an inclusive organization.
What's nice about the Y is it is representative of its community. So here it is. I do want to say that Gary is sitting here doing the dance.
I can't believe he's doing the
dance. Gary is doing the dance.
Gary is doing the dance.
Yeah. We need to call our video producer.
Told you we should have the show on the web.
We should.
So the YMCA, this is pretty neat trivia.
I would like to ask our listeners. Charles's little commercial does air. His email address is on it. Send him pictures and videos of you doing the YMCA, and we'll put them on the bar website.
We will put them on the bar website, and I will link them to the YMCA Facebook page.
See that? As a matter of fact, Braulio@BrowardBar.org. Braulio@BrowardBar.org. Email Braulio, our executive director. Okay. YMCA. Make sure you CC Charles. We'll put them up on the bar website and the YMCA. You heard it here.
Gary, I think you just bought somebody a new email server.
Wow. Yeah, Hillary.
Here's something interesting. I came to Schutz and Bowen a year and a half ago, and I had already been involved with the YMCA. And in April of last year, the YMCA of Broward County merged with the YMCA of Miami-Dade and Monroe. Okay. And we had this big 100th anniversary gala. And, of course, I had to ask for a sponsorship, and it winds up that the YMCA of Miami-Dade 100 years ago was formed by Colonel Frank Schutz.
Of Schutz and Bowen.
Of Schutz and Bowen.
Your boy.
And the very first board meeting of the YMCA of Miami-Dade was at Schutz and Bowen's boardroom. So
And you got your sponsorship.
And I got my sponsorship, of course.
There you go.
But then when we had 1 year of having the merger, we continued the tradition, and we had our meeting at Schutz and Bowen's boardroom in Miami.
You know, that's great. It's a great organization.
That's
congratulations.
Cool.
It is a really cool synchronicity.
I have a great YMCA not far from me in Boynton. I mean, my kids went swimming there. It's a first-class facility. The programs are really, really well run. It's affordable. Like, when you're paying for lessons than anything for kids these days is not cheap.
Right. Yeah, they don't turn anyone away for need.
No, and then,
really,
and you pay your fee and you have access to everything they provide, and it's like one stop shopping, which I'm a big fan of. It's fantastic. You can't beat it.
We're actually trying to get another one on the east side of Fort Lauderdale. Deal is not done yet, so I will not give the details, but that will be exciting.
So, Jack, if I'm a business owner, where can I turn for information to help me manage and run my business?
You can email me at jhowe@shutts.com, and I can be their quarterback. I can put them in touch with the right person to help them get through their particular issues, whether it be if they're buying a healthcare business or any other commercial business, and we can point them in the right direction and keep them well informed.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot. This is
all. Oh,
you mean now?
Yeah, I'm not
going to
say anything
that you haven't yet.
Now, and you don't have to do the dance. No, but if you have three things from your experience to have employers know or not do or do to help their business, what would that be?
See,
I told you, I put you on the spot.
Don't ask questions like, are you married, during the interview.
Oh, no.
Okay.
That would be bad.
I'm having flashbacks from last week.
That would be bad.
What if the applicant brings something up? What if the applicant brings up, oh, I have kids? Can you then ask about it?
I would stay very clear of that. Obviously, you know, an applicant, and one would hope that there's a synergy, you know, in a chemistry when you're interviewing a potential applicant, but really try to stay away from the landmines. Don't ask, you know, inappropriate questions.
Sexual orientation, Jen, you know, anything that's, you know, off limits.
Okay, what else? That's one.
That's one. You know, what was the context?
Just three things that employers can not do or do to make their lives better.
Have employment contracts.
Yeah,
and
really.
Have non-compete. And have non-solicitation agreements, and have them drafted by an attorney.
So generally speaking, every type of business really should have employment contracts?
If you have any type of particular skill set.
Proprietary stuff.
What about like law firms, paralegals?
They can't have non-compete.
No, I mean employment contracts.
Anytime you can level the playing field so people know what it is that they are expecting in return for the services that they are performing, you are helping to avoid disagreements, misunderstandings, and litigation down the road.
But if you show me a contract, I'll show you one that can be broken.
If
it's just an at-will employment with the state of Florida, and I say, you're fired, bye-bye.
And then you'll still find some. There is.
Well, that's the question. What's the other side of that? Yeah.
Even if it is an at-will employment contract, you'll still find an employer or an employee that'll say, I was fired because of my sexual orientation. I was fired because I'm over 40.
Well, people can say anything. Yeah,
exactly.
The contract doesn't help that or change that.
Gary
no,
can't
but
dance.
It helps put you on notice that we are taking these things. It depends on the position that
for
you're
sure.
being employed by. Obviously, if it's an executive level or a managerial position, you definitely, as an employer, want to err on the side of caution.
Maybe my boss is listening. I am available for an employment contract for the next 15 years of my life. Please.
They usually do have termination provisions. I'm just saying.
Okay, I'll try and drive within the lines. Okay?
And real quick, is severance pay a good idea for employers? We only have about a minute. You're giving severance pay.
It depends on the particular position. If it's a managerial or a C-level person, they're going to expect it.
But does it get you out of trouble?
No.
So you can give them the severance pay, then they sue you anyway.
Sure. Well, somebody can always sue you. Yeah.
Well, if they sign the severance pay, you want something in return,
If I give you the check, and in exchange for the severance check, you sign a release.
Now we're in business.
Then we're in business. But if I just have to hand over a check.
Then you're a dummy.
I wouldn't put it quite that way.
As Charles offends most of our listeners today.
On that note, and it's actually good advice, if you're going to give someone money, at least get a signature in return for it. I do want to thank you.
Have a release drafted by an attorney.
And real quick, Jackie, how can people get in a hold of you? What's your email address?
My email address, again, is jhowe@shutts.com.
And Charles, your email address?
It is charles@floridainjurylawyers.com.
And that was a sucker punch, because that's where you want to send your videos of the dance, right to that. Or you can send them to me, Gary@GarySingerLaw, just like I said it, .com. And I want to wish everyone out there a safe ride home and a great week.
This
and
is not
thanks
good.
For
this
listening
is going downhill.
In.
Thank you for listening to Florida Law Talk,
a service of the Broward County Bar Association. With over 3,200 members, we can connect you with an attorney to meet your every need. To get more information, go to browardbar.org. Or better yet, call 954-764-8310. That's 954-764-8310 to get connected to the legal advice you're looking for. And tune in again next time for more Florida Law Talk.
The opinions expressed on the preceding sponsored program were strictly those of its hosts, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of the station, its staff, management, or sponsors.